You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Denver Riggleman was a very conservative Republican from Virginia, still is a very conservative Republican from Virginia, a state that was trending blue until the recent unpleasantness. Riggleman was a member of the rabidly conservative House Freedom Caucus. Those were the Tea Party crazies who now seem positively sane compared to the Trumpist crazies. And then Riggleman made the mistake of officiating at a gay friend's wedding, and social conservatives freaked the fuck out, funded a primary challenger, and Riggleman lost his seat in 2020 despite being endorsed by Donald Trump. Rona Romney McDaniel, she's the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee and Mitt Romney's niece, because we live in a meritocracy. Never forget that we live in a meritocracy. Anyway, last month, McDaniel rolled out a big new campaign to attract low-information LGBT voters to the GOP. She called it the RNC Pride Coalition. And days later, McDaniel had to issue a shit-eating apology because social conservatives were demanding her resignation. The RNC Pride Coalition, which was her idea, was quietly euthanized, and McDaniel sent an email out to social conservatives reaffirming the Republican Party's opposition to same-sex marriage, as well as its support for dismantling anti-discrimination statutes that protect LGBT people from discrimination. Just so we're clear on who and what the GOP is, where queer people are concerned. They hate us, still. And yet, every 4 years, every 2 years, every 6 months, the LGBT community gets gaslit by bullshitting self-hating gay conservatives and mainstream media outlets looking for a new story to tell. And the story they like to tell us constantly is that, gee whiz, maybe today's GOP isn't as anti-gay or anti-queer or anti-trans as it once was. Yeah, no. They're still anti-LGBT, still anti-gay, still anti-queer, still anti-trans, if anything. The anti-gay, anti-queer, anti-trans rhetoric from the right is getting worse, not better. Take, for example, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. He is a rising star in the GOP. He's running for governor of North Carolina, and he's doing most of his campaigning from the pulpits of tax-exempt churches that shouldn't be tax-exempt. And Robinson is giving the GOP base what it wants: anti-gay, anti-trans, hate. There's no other word for it. He just gave a sermon at the Berean Baptist Church in Winston-Salem in which he said, well, I'm not going to read it myself. It's on YouTube. Let's have a listen.
Where I will dwell with him someday, there I'll praise him and I'll adore him, singing all eternity, praising his name, praising his name. But just think of stepping on shore and finding it heaven, of touching a hand and finding it God's, of breathing new air and finding it celestial, of waking up in glory.
Okay, sorry. That wasn't Robinson. That was the Sweeney Todd Tonsorial Parlor Barbershop Quartet from Ex-Gay Hell. They sang before Robinson spoke, and I've never seen four white men look at big, black, pendulous, handheld mics with such longing before. And if you think listening to that was bad, and if I had to listen to it, you had to listen to it, after watching it, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to have an erection again in the same room with four white guys. So good job, Berean Baptist Church. Anyway, let's get to Robinson's bullshit. After comparing gay people to cow shit and declaring cow shit more desirable because you can fertilize fields with it, you can fertilize fields with Santorum too, Mr. Robinson, but whatever. Here's what Robinson had to say about why gay people are inferior to straight people.
Now let's look at it this way. Gay couple, straight couple, dark room, 9 months later, gay couple, two people. 9 months later, heterosexual, three people. These people are superior because they can do something these people can't do. Because that's the way God created it to be. I'm tired of this society trying to tell me it's not so.
He also had a little something to say about trans people. I'm going to play this clip. If you're trans and feeling a little vulnerable right now, you might want to skip ahead.
Ain't but two genders, male and female. Two. There are two genders, male and female. And I don't care how much you cut yourself up, drug yourself up, and dress yourself up. You still either one or two things. You either a man or a woman. You might be a cut up, dressed up, drugged up, ugly man or a woman. But you still a man or a woman.
Okay, first off, fuck him. He's wrong. Trans people, you exist. You are not ugly. And now, before I say what I want to say next, let me just say first that beauty comes in all different shapes and sizes. Hot is subjective and confidence is hot, and different people find all different kinds of people and all different kinds of bodies hot. So, everyone out there just needs to be confident that someone else out there finds you hot. Someone finds your type hot, regardless of size or gender. Okay? Now I want to say what I wanted to say. Is everybody braced? Because I am going to reference conventional standards of male beauty now. I am not endorsing those standards. What I am doing is suggesting that Mark Robinson falls short of the same standards of beauty he's weaponizing when he attacks trans people and claims they're ugly. Mark Robinson, if you've seen him, is a very big guy. He doesn't himself embody conventional and prevailing standards of male beauty. He is no Michael B. Jordan. He's no Idris Elba. He's no Shawn Mendes. So it was a little jarring to watch him accuse other people of being unworthy of respect or their full civil equality because of the way they look. Trans people, he can tell, are trans by looking at them. And he attacks them for not reflecting the same conventional prevailing standards of male or female beauty that he himself falls far short of. Judge not, lest ye be judged, Mr. Robinson, as someone or other once said. Okay, now I want to back up real quick and talk about that whole straight people being superior thing. I don't think Mark Robinson is going to hear this, so I'm not arguing with him and this isn't for him. But I get emails and calls all the time from young people who were raised in the kind of churches where Robinson was preaching and campaigning last week. Cam preaching, preach painting, whatever it is he's doing. And these young people find their way to the Lovecast and other sex positive podcasts and other really great sex positive Instagram accounts and other sex positive writers. And they're busy unlearning what the Mark Robinsons of the world taught them about sex, and their pastors and their parents taught them about sex and love and gender. So a lot of my listeners may know what I'm about to say, but some new listeners may be hearing this for the first time. Some young gay and lesbian listeners. I'm saying this to you and for you, and I'm going to unpack this a bit. You're not inferior. Sure, gay people can't make babies. That is true. Unless we want to, and then suddenly we can. So it's not like gay people don't know the secret recipe. It's not like gay people have to break into the National Archives and steal the Declaration of Independence because how to make a baby is written in invisible ink on the back of it every time we want to make a baby. We know how to make a baby. Gay men can make babies. Lesbians can make babies. Sometimes we make them with each other or with surrogates or sperm donors. Sometimes two gay men can make a baby because when a gay cis man and a gay trans man love each other very much, they can go into a room, give each other a very special hug, and 9 months later, there are three people in that room. So, that thing that only straight people can do, we can do it too, when we want to. And you know what's hilarious about this whole argument? That the ability to make a baby makes straight people superior to gay people? Straight people spend most of their lives desperately trying to avoid doing that thing only straight people can do. That thing gay people can't do except when gay people want to, which is make a baby. I'm not going to leap to the other side and suggest that being gay is superior. It's not. It's different. But when you don't want to make a baby, which most people don't want to do most of the time, being gay is pretty convenient. And when you do want to make a baby, which some people do once or twice in their lives, being gay presents a problem, but not an insurmountable one. Like all four members of the Sweeney Todd Tonsorial Parlor Barbershop Quartet from Ex-Gay Hell, it is a mountable problem. So again, to new, young, gay, lesbian listeners who may still worry that gay sex is sick or sinful or inferior because it doesn't make babies, I'm here to tell you it's not, and that you're not. You don't have to take my word for it, though. You just have to look at what the straight people are doing, what straight people have to teach us about sex, what straight people's behavior demonstrates about what sex is for. Because most of the time, even for straight people, it's not for making babies. That's why straight people use condoms and IUDs and have abortions and have sex after menopause and sex after vasectomies and oral sex and sex in the butt. Because sex is for making human connections. Sex is about relationships, intimacy, pleasure, and release. And every once in a while, for straight people and gay people alike, it's about making a baby. Which means there's nothing straight people can do in dark rooms or anywhere else that gay people can't, that you can't. All right, coming up on this week's Savage Lovecast on the Micro and Magnum editions, tons of your questions, lots of my answers. And on the Magnum, Professor Lloyd Johnston is here for a special What You Got segment about the HIV epidemic, what it looks like now, and some interesting facts about young people and sex. All that coming up on this week's show. This episode of Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 33-year-old bi cis woman living in New York City. I'm calling in response to the episode with the 23-year-old virgin. I have a quasi-sex success story for any virgins out there or people who might encounter older virgins out there. So around this time last year, I was on Bumble and I matched with a guy. We started talking. We really hit it off. We had a ton in common. We went out for a date and we had the best time. At the end of the date, I went to kiss him because we were really vibing. He pecked me really quickly on the cheek and basically was like, no, thanks. And I was really confused because we had such a great time. After I left, he texted me and told me that he, at the age of 32, was a virgin and had only ever kissed a girl once. And he was freaking out because he had recently lost a lot of weight. He had always been kind of socially awkward, but had been in therapy for a while and was really starting to put himself out there. He told me most women that he's told this to run in the opposite direction. I took some time to think about it and decided it would be kind of fun to embark on this sexual journey with him. So I took his virginity at the age of 32. We were both 32 at the time, and it was incredibly fun. I got to teach him how to give oral sex. I gave him his first blowjob. I had sex with him for the first time. He was super into it and super into me. It felt really empowering, really hot. And throughout the entire time we started seeing each other for maybe 2 or 3 months, I did feel like he was a little too green for me to be with long term, but we were really open and communicative. He understood that how I felt and that I needed him to go and experience the world a lot more before committing to any kind of relationship with him. So we had a really successful short-term relationship. It kind of ran its course. We had a lot of sex, since this was the first time he had ever done it, he wanted it a lot, and he really wanted to please me and learn how to do all of the things. And yeah, we wound up going our separate ways. He now has a girlfriend, and I'm so happy for him. I introduced him to this show, so maybe he's listening. You know who you are if you are. And I'm now in a relationship with someone, and I couldn't be happier. He and I still occasionally keep in touch, and I told him I'd always be there for him as his first one. But for anyone listening, don't let the virgin label scare you off. It was incredibly fun. He was a really eager learner, and we had a great time.
I said we were going to phase out the success stories, but I would bring them back every once in a while if we got a really good one and I wanted to make an exception. Well, your call is the first success story we're making an exception for and bringing back this week. And occasionally, if we want to, a sex success story. And I wanted to run this one because, yeah, good note to everybody out there. Don't let the virgin label scare you off. You can have a really good experience with a virgin. But more importantly, for the virgins out there, don't be afraid to scare people off with the virgin. I guess it's not a label, the virgin fact about yourself. Think of all the women who ran screaming when this guy in this story told them that he was a virgin. They cleared the field so that the right woman would come along, the caller would come along, the woman who regarded sleeping with this guy, taking his virginity, having this first sexual experience with him, giving him his first sexual experience, not taking anything from him. She regarded that as something fun, pleasurable, erotic, kind of an honor. Yeah, if the virgin in this story had lied to all those other women and pretended that he was more experienced than he actually was, he may have fumbled into sex with somebody who wasn't as kind and considerate and compassionate and wasn't able and ready and excited about meeting him exactly where he was at. Never fun, I realize, when you tell someone something about yourself, when you make yourself vulnerable and you reveal a fact about yourself that's relevant to the sex you might want to have with that person, and that person runs away. But if that person runs away once they know that fact about you, whatever it might be, not someone you wanted to be in bed with anyway. And someone's going to come along that you're going to share that fact with, who's going to feel honored that you shared that fact with them, is going to want to be with you because of it, or because you shared that with them, because you trusted them enough to share that with them. And that's the right person to go to bed with. So that is a great success story. Thank you for calling and sharing it. If you have a success story, listener, and you think it might be exceptional, it might be another one that we will make an exception for in the future, feel free to call and share. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Are you ready for an impending extreme cozy season? It's coming. And thank goodness MeUndies is here to gird your loins in comfy softness for the upcoming dark but cozy days. Personally, I fear nothing from cozy season because I have my beloved lounge pants. Sometimes I'm even spotted through a window of our house in my lounge onesie. Very comfy, covers everything, even has a hood. When it's too hot to wear my lounge pants or occasionally my lounge onesie, I mourn. But now they're back. The days where I can wear my lounge pants cozy all day long, and Nancy is desperate for it to get cold enough to wear her new MeUndies PJs. MeUndies loungewear, undies, and sleepwear are made out of soft, breathable, stretchy fabrics that are ideal for hanging out by a crackling fire. Get the family photo you've always dreamed of with matching PJ sets, or make every day a spa day with their new plush robes and plush slippers. Whatever you decide, everyone will be rolling into the new year comfier than ever before with good stuff from MeUndies, all available in sizes XS through 4XL. So MeUndies has a little something comforting for everyone on your list. MeUndies also has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping right to your door. Your days of fighting for your life in the mall parking lot are over. Let the comfy and cozy come right to you. To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I am a gay 31-year-old cisgendered male living in Southern California. I've been in a relationship with my fiance for about 5 years, which we are semi-long distance due to me finishing my last year of undergrad. And recently we had an issue of me signing up for a hookup site and someone he knew told him about it. Me and him were able to have a big conversation about communication and trust to help get us back on track, and we are pretty good now. Me and my fiance had prior conversations about open relationships, which he knew I was for, but he never gave me a clear-cut answer to how he felt, and I wrongfully assumed he would never get there. But after our big conversation recently, he expressed that he never was a hard no to the idea, but just needed time to figure out how that could work for him, especially going through trauma of being cheated on in his previous relationships. So my question is, what is the best way to get him more comfortable to an open relationship without feeling under duress?
You left something out of your call. Why did you put your profile up on a hookup app? And what did you tell your fiance after a mutual, I guess, at least on your side, former friend, ratted you out to him that you had a profile up on a hookup app? As far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of reasons people get on hookup apps. A lot of people get on hookup apps with no intention of hooking up. Some people get on hookup apps to be inspired, to feel horny, to have a wank, to socialize. A lot of gay men treat hookup apps like another kind of social media site and have profiles there just for the interactions, for the eye candy, and have no intention of actually meeting up, to the frustration of other people on hookup apps who are actually looking to meet up. Presumably, that was what was going on with you. Presumably, you know, if your fiance has issues because he's been cheated on in the past, and that's his hang-up about having an open relationship or even a non-awkward conversation about opening up the relationship with you, his fiance, you know, someone he's been with for 5 years, it would have been a major, major crisis in your relationship, if not the end of your relationship and the end of your engagement, if you'd gone there looking to hook up. So I'm just going to assume that the conversation you had with your fiance after you were ratted out by your former friend, at least on your side, was, yeah, you had no intention of hooking up. You're long distance right now and you were just checking it out. But it forced the conversation, forced the discussion, or forced you both to revisit the conversation about opening the relationship. Seems like your boyfriend, your fiance, pardon me, is willing to have that conversation, is willing to open the relationship, but he's going to need you to be sensitive to the fact that he has, as he called it, I think it's maybe not what I would call it, he has trauma. He carries trauma around because he's been cheated on in the past. Other relationships, other boyfriends cheated on him, and that was traumatic for him. And yeah, okay, well, you're gonna have to be sensitive to that, sensitive to your fiance's trauma, and take that into consideration. And one way that you demonstrate sensitivity to his trauma, now that you know about it, assuming you didn't know about it before, is by not signing up on hookup apps and putting your identifying details out there for other people to see and then report back to him. That would be one good way to demonstrate to your boyfriend that you want to take this slowly and you're not going to rush him and you don't want to make him uncomfortable or make him feel insecure or re-traumatize him or throw him back into those traumatic moments in his past when he realized he'd been cheated on by his previous boyfriends. You don't want to put him back in those moments. And so you're not going to do this again. I think that's where you start. Sorry that we're revisiting this discussion because I got on a hookup app and you found out about it. Not the best way to revisit this conversation or have this conversation. And so I won't do that again, but let's keep having this conversation because you'd like to have an open relationship. You're long distance right now. Maybe he'd like to also have an open relationship at the moment, but you're going to talk about it in advance and you're not going to do anything again in the future without his prior knowledge and consent. You're not going to do anything that he's not comfortable with. And that, I'm sure, what you did, getting on a hookup app, putting your face I assume your face or your tattoos or something that was identifying on that hookup app for other people to see, including other people who knew him, who felt that they had to run to him and tattle on you. Yeah, you're not going to do that again. At the very least, when you get on a hookup app in the future, it's going to be with his permission. And so when someone comes running to him, God, if you have shitty friends, if you have more than one shitty friend who would do something like that, if someone's going to come running to him, instead of being blindsided by that, he'll be able to say, oh yeah, I know, I'm on that same hookup app. We're in an open relationship, an honest, ethical, open relationship. Therapy is so important for many of us and can help, I think, all of us. I recommend therapy all the time on this show, but I know that finding a good therapist can be really difficult. And when you're struggling, it's even harder to find the energy to reach out and find a good therapist that fits your life. That's why I recommend Talkspace. The Talkspace app makes it easy to connect with your licensed therapist on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. Send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the app. Schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Whether you're a parent, student, millennial, or just someone having a really hard day, Talkspace can provide the support to help you feel better with a single message. If you need a little support to help you through the end of the year or want to start building towards a better upcoming year, Talkspace is here to help. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code SAVAGE. That's $100 off when you use the code SAVAGE at Talkspace.com.
Hi all, I am a genderqueer queer who lives in Chicago, and I was assigned female at birth, and I have a question about the holidays and like just advocating for myself around my pronouns. I use they, them. My in-laws kind of waffle between using my pronouns and misgendering me, and my bio parents they've never used they, them for me despite many asks. I'm just kind of wondering, is it worth the fight sometimes, or do I just kind of shut up and take it even though it really sucks?
It depends on how important it is to you that your in-laws and your parents gender you correctly, they stop misgendering you, that they use your pronouns. If it's really important to you, you have to be prepared to go to war. You know, I remember when I came out to my family as gay, and my mom, who came around and was great in the end and came around very quickly. I always like to say that she came around quick and then came out swinging in defense of gay people and her son and then other queer people. But at first, she didn't want to meet anybody that I was dating. And I really had to fight her on that. I had to eventually put my foot down and go to war. And tell her that if my boyfriends couldn't come over, I wouldn't come over. Are you prepared to do that? Are you prepared to go to war with your in-laws and parents? They may see this as trivial. They may find it confusing to use what they've always used, although, you know, occasionally even people who only use they, them as a plural pronoun will say things like, did you see the doctor today? What did they tell you? You could point that out to them if there's occasions where they use they, them in a similar way to how you're asking them to use they, them, and then draw a line. Like, if you keep insulting me like this, if you don't respect who I am, who I've told you that I am, I'm not going to come around. I'm not going to see you. I'm not going to show up for what I experience as degrading or dehumanizing or just simple inconsideration for my feelings. So, what's it going to be? Going to finally make the shift and use my pronouns? Or are you going to dig in, keep being an asshole about this, and see a whole lot less of me than you might otherwise? Do you need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch up your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? If you know what you want, or even if you don't know where to start, Pill Club has your back. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid.
Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, the Pill Club's licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So, skip the office visit and skip waiting in line at the pharmacy. Join the club. And right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage to get your first birth control care package and to donate to help more women in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 36-year-old cis bisexual from Denver. I've been single 6 months after a 7-year relationship ended earlier this year. I decided to try to find a regular fuck buddy while I heal from my previous relationship. I found the perfect candidate, a man who lived a few doors down. He was recently divorced and a fellow pothead from Michigan. We flirted and bantered for a few months, and a few weeks ago, I taped my number to his door and we scheduled a date. We had an incredible time after a public meetup close to home. We kept the date going. I was very clear about my emotional availability and that I was looking for something casual. 12 hours later, let's just say it was a lot of bong hits, discussions on 90s grunge music, and eventually some mind-blowing sex. He left my apartment early that morning, and before he left, he asked me to have dinner that night. I never heard from him again. Later that week, I was shocked to see a police officer outside of his door as I was coming home. The officer informed me that he had passed, likely the morning that he had left my apartment. I'm in a really weird headspace. This night, his death, the coroner's sign plastered to his door for a week, walking past his apartment every time I take out the trash. It all feels awful. I feel as though I'm overreacting, but I can't seem to let myself off the hook for that night. I keep thinking I did something wrong or caused his death somehow. Do I even have a right to grieve something so short-lived?
All right, you don't say what the cause of death was, but I assume it was a suicide?
No, I actually don't know. So when I came home the day that I saw the police officers outside of his apartment, you know, I said, I've been trying to get a hold of my friend who lives in that apartment. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you that he passed. And he was a little bit older. He's 49. I'm 36. And he said it appeared to be natural as it could be for somebody that was 49. So to me, I took that as like no needle in his arm, but and no, like obviously no obvious signs of suicide. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, yeah, man, I can see why you were impacted by this. I don't see why you feel guilt as opposed to feeling like this man's last night on earth, this man's last night in existence was a good night because of you.
I go back and forth, but honestly, like, I don't know if he had any health problems. Like, we truly hadn't spent any time, significant time together outside of just the elevator. Hi, how are you doing? And then that night, you know, we had talked a lot, but we, of course, didn't talk about his health. So I don't know if he had, you know, any kind of conditions.
Wait, like, are you worried you fucked this man to death?
Yes.
Okay. You have to let go of that. It is really rare for someone even having very athletic sex to, you know, have a heart attack and die as a result of it hours later. You have to let go of the guilt that you're feeling. You know, if anything, you should be, you know, it is really hard. And, you know, a random, unexpected early death really forces us to confront our own mortality, how short our time is on Earth, how little we can actually, how much we take for granted, but how little we should take for granted.
Yeah.
And, you know, my heart goes out to you, and grief has its own logic, and it is never okay to tell someone they're not allowed to grieve, and I'm not telling you you're not allowed to grieve. You made a connection. You really liked this guy. You established some boundaries. He seemed like a really good candidate to be the person that you needed right now in your life, and that was taken from you suddenly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk all the time about how wonderful a short-term relationship can be and how loving and transcendent a short-term relationship can be. And often, you know, ideally a short-term relationship is short-term because circumstances don't allow it to go on any longer. Sometimes it's short-term because the universe intervenes. You're allowed to feel your feelings about that. You're allowed to feel grief, and you're allowed to feel love for this person that you spent one night for, and to feel his absence now, and to mourn him.
Yeah, I haven't dealt with a lot of grief in life like this. I haven't had anyone close to me die. And even though he wasn't close, it felt closer than anyone I've known that's passed. And it just hit me in a different way. And I, you know, my friends kind of joke about it, which I understand, like, the story's crazy. And it is one of those stories that I'm sure in 10 years from now, I'll tell without so much, like, pain, I guess. And I feel as though, like, why am I so sad? Like, I don't know.
Well, let's drill down on that pain. It's a particular kind of grief for what could have been, what might have been.
Yeah.
You know, you really connected with this guy. To protect yourself at this moment, you established this boundary that you weren't as emotionally available as you may have been, you know, if you hadn't just gotten out of a marriage, if you weren't, you know, only looking for a fuck buddy. But it sounds like you connected in such a way that maybe, and you made a dinner date for the next night, maybe you were rethinking those boundaries already. And that's...
I was.
And that's what can be so weird about someone who's ripped from you unexpectedly very shortly after you meet them, is that some part of your brain is projecting yourself far into the future and imagining not just what you could have with them in the future, but in some ways imagining the history you would already have with them at that point in the imagined future. And all of that was taken from you, and a life ended. Feel it. Feel sad, feel grief, but do not, you know, and I'm not, again, telling you you can't feel your feelings, but I just think the guilt is misplaced.
Yeah, and that's what everyone's been telling me, but it's just hard. I don't know, like, when I can't know why or how or what happened, it's hard for me to process, and I'm never going to know, so I have to accept that.
Let's worst case scenario it then. He had some heart condition he wasn't aware of, and the sex that he had with you resulted in a heart attack. Okay, better that, like a human connection and a last night on earth spent enjoying someone's company, having awesome sex, than he like took a Zoom class and collapsed and died.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
If it was some medical condition that he wasn't aware of, or even one that he was aware of, it could have been anything. Running up the stairs, running down the stairs to get a pizza, you know, deciding to take up running again, or, you know, a Zoom cloud, or it could have been anything. It was you.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. That's a wonderful thing. You lived a whole life, really, with this man in one night, and a whole relationship unfolded.
It definitely feels like that. It feels like I knew him forever. But I don't even know if I know his last name.
Oh my God, my heart. Like, I ache for you. I ache for you. That's hard. That's tough. It must be even harder with your friends telling you you're not allowed to feel sad about this.
Yeah. I mean, they were definitely there the first day and, like, you know, trying to support me. But after that, I just felt like, and a part of it was me. I feel as though I don't deserve to feel any way about it because I didn't know him. And like, why do I feel sad still? Like, I've now, it's been probably 3 weeks now, and I still feel this pang of like hurt and just everything, all the emotions, because I have to walk past his door every time I leave my apartment, every time. And I got to watch the coroner go in and out and take his stuff. And then I got to watch you know, the cleaning people come through and I saw his apartment empty like 5 days later. It's just like an entire life was erased. And it just feels shitty.
An entire life was erased, but also that imagined future, the possibility that he represented for you in your life, not to make his death about you, but that's part of what's informing your sadness. Genuine grief for him, sadness for him, his family, but also some sadness for yourself and what might have been, what could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to feel sad about that. And, you know, I am going to make this comparison. So nobody can yell at you for making this comparison. I'm making this comparison. When my mother died, I was a wreck and I was devastated until I read something that, you know, grief is the price we pay for love. Queen Elizabeth II said it. And I saw that in a church where I was lurking to feel sad. And in an instant, my grief meant something. My grief was a memorial to my mother instead of a trap that I was in. And it became something beautiful. And so that would be what I would want to give to you. Allow yourself to feel this grief. It's not useless. You're entitled to it. And it is a memorial to this man who is going to leave this earth at some point, as we all are. You will never forget him.
Never.
And what you had with him, even though it was just a day, was really important. In some ways, those kinds of human connections are all that matters and all that survives us.
Yeah. I definitely feel good about the fact that I was able to connect with somebody like that again, because I had been, you know, I was in a relationship for 7 years and it was my first like date. So it was kind of like traumatic in that sense as well. I waited 7 months to finally like put myself out there, and I did. And then that's what happened. And now I'm like having a hard time putting myself back out there.
Well, look at it this way. It can't go worse when you put yourself back out there.
You're right. That's a good point.
It's all up from here, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen.
That's a good point.
Good luck. And my heart goes out to you.
I appreciate the call so much.
You know, I hate that that Twitter discourse around this is valid, that is valid, but I'm going to use the V word. Your grief is valid.
Thank you. That means a lot. It does.
Hello, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am calling because my life has been changed by this podcast and by you. So thank you so very much for opening me up and making me feel more comfortable and, you know, let me communicate with my partner. But the issue I have is that I still feel just incredibly guilty every time I orgasm, no matter what we're doing. I have really great sex with my wife, and we're both bisexual, and we've both experienced different things in the past, and we've got two kids, and we've had lots of partners, and life is pretty good. But I just don't understand why there's guilt. Why is it that when I'm, you know, having a great time and really enjoying myself, those final moments, I just feel like shame and guilt, like I shouldn't do it. I'm not religious. I wasn't brought up in a religious background. I don't have religious parents. I've been listening to you for forever. My wife and I are open about everything, you know, porn and what we like, and we have a great time. But for some reason, I just, every time I have that orgasm, there's guilt. And I just wish I knew how to unpack that or to work that out. So I'd really love your advice.
My hunch is that you're misinterpreting your own feelings during the refractory period. You've read a lot about sex. You've listened to me and others talk a lot about sex. It sounds like you know a lot about sex. You've had a lot of sex. I'm sure you're familiar with that term, the refractory period. After a man climaxes, he suddenly loses interest in sexual activity, in continuing to have sex. His erection goes away. Doesn't feel good to have his dick touched. And also in that moment, all sorts of things that were turning him on prior to climax, it's not just that you lose interest in them. They're suddenly kind of repulsive. I don't know how many times I've been with guys who were really kind of turned on about wanting to eat their own cum. You know, they wanted to be snowballed or fed their own cum. And then they came. And then they didn't want to eat their own cum anymore or be fed their own cum. And I think more snowballs are contemplated than thrown or suggested than actually thrown or spat into anybody else's mouth, because the person who you're blowing and is telling you they want you to spit their cum back into their mouths after you suck it out of their necks, the minute they come, yeah, not so interested anymore. The refractory period has the power to do that. It's this big sudden drop. And it has an emotional component. And you suddenly feel differently in that moment about sex. You kind of are done. You want to do something else. The cliche in films, you know, people rolled over and lit a cigarette. They distracted themselves from sex. They turned away from sex. Our house, we run downstairs, we get a bowl of ice cream. I think that's what's going on for you. I think you're just feeling that drop, that sudden falling off, sudden disinterest, even revulsion. You know, you think about a lot of things that we do when we're having sex. And if we weren't having sex while we were doing them, we would think that was pretty gross. Touching somebody else's asshole with your tongue, swapping spit with somebody else. If you're just going to walk across a room and spit into someone else's mouth, you would think that was gross. But if you were sexually attracted to that person and sexual tension built for a while, and then you were making out and you were swapping a lot of spit, you were essentially spitting into their mouths and they were spitting into yours, it's a turn on while you're aroused. The instant you're no longer aroused, it kind of goes back to, oh, that's a little gross. Was I really just doing that? I think that's what's happening here. I don't think you feel guilty. You weren't raised in a religious tradition. You don't feel like a bad person for being who you are sexually. You're just confused. You're just experiencing that shift back to ew, yuck, or that falling off of sexual interest or arousal or desire. And experiencing it as, well, this must be guilt about what I just did, as opposed to, this is what happens to almost everybody after climax, after doing what you just did. There is this moment where suddenly sex, which is so all-consuming and so interesting, while before you're having it, when you want to have it, while you're having it, it's the last thing you want to do is put your tongue in somebody else's asshole after your climax, or have somebody spit your cum into your mouth after you've blown your load in theirs. Think of it that way. And think of what might be a better pivot than obsessing in that moment about how you might be feeling and allowing yourself to experience it as guilt. Think about what you can do to distract yourself. At the very least, tell yourself in that moment, I am not feeling guilty. I am just not feeling it anymore because now I am in my refractory period. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. WP Schlitz tweets, if people would just realize that sexuality and gender are spectrums, not binaries, at Fake Dan Savage could dedicate his life to properly flared bases and lesser known kinks and not have to pacify worried bisexuals in every single episode. All right, no one enjoys talking about flared bases and niche kinks more than I do, but I am happy, always happy to take questions from worried bisexuals, along with questions from worried heterosexuals, homosexuals, asexuals, allosexuals, pansexuals, phrasexuals, demisexuals, all the sexuals. Stephen Forrest tweets, hey, at Fake Dan Savage, did you say disinhibiting crutch or disinhibiting crotch last week? I confess, a disinhibiting crotch sounds like fun when unleashed respectfully in appropriate situations. I said disinhibiting crutch. I was referring to the drugs and alcohol some people sadly have to use to let go of their sexual inhibitions, which can work out sometimes, but can also end disastrously. So disinhibiting crutch, not crotch. Forgive me if that's ableist. And yeah, disinhibiting crotch, when you think about it, we've all encountered a few of those in our times. And finally, switching it up to an Instagram DM, at Spark Intimacy had this to say about the caller who met a guy into puke. If it is indeed a fetish, says Speak Intimacy, that means he prefers vom as part of sexual experiences. It doesn't mean it has to be. Can he get this need met through porn, another partner, some other workaround? Thanks to everyone who tweeted or posted to Instagram about the Lovecast last week. We really appreciate it. And if you want me to read your tweet on next week's episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hello, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Youth. I'm calling in response to the woman who experienced a libido boost after sobering up. yeah, enjoy the sex, like you say, but it's also a fairly common occurrence on people when they first sober up or quit using substances, that they experience an overall feeling of well-being. The jargon sometimes calls it pink clouding. And this may be followed by a period where the underlying causes of addiction or substance abuse surface. So enjoy the sex, but also take the time to set up a good, strong recovery program. Enjoy the sex. Enjoy the sobriety.
Hey, Dan. With respect to the person whose libido came roaring back after she got sober, I think the real key there might be the fact that she quit smoking. When you quit smoking, you start getting better blood flow, and better blood flow to peripheral areas includes areas that if they have more blood, you're going to be more aroused more frequently. And if they have less blood, the opposite. So I know that a lot of times when people quit smoking, they get, you know, more and harder erections, and something similar may be going on with her. So I think that should be something to certainly incentivize more people to quit smoking.
Hi, Dan. Calling in regards to the intro from episode 787, specifically the toe-tapping code made famous by Larry Craig. Imagine the feeling of serendipity I had this week as I was reading Confess, the memoir from Judas Priest's famously out frontman Rob Halford, and he mentioned employing the toe-tapping ritual on tour. It was implied that he learned it from Bob Dameron's address book, a gay travel guide that he picked up when Priest played in San Francisco for the first time in the late 70s. Maybe that's where Larry Craig learned it, too.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment, and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We prefer those voice memos. They have better sound quality. But we love your calls and your comments however you want to get them to us. The deadline to enter Hump 2022 is just 1 week away, which is still plenty of time to find a sexy pal and make a short porn flick for consideration. They just have to be under 5 minutes. Things have gotten into Hump that were 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 45 seconds long, so you don't have to go for the full five. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit for all the other info you need on making the perfect flick for My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival. And this holiday season, you can give the gift of a good sex life by gifting someone a Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast at savage.love, or you can grab a copy of my new book, Savage Love from A to Z, for your loved ones. It has 26 all-new essays on all topics, Savage Love, and great illustrations from Joe Newton. Get one today wherever books are sold. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Check out Professor Johnston's study at monitoringthefuture.org. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Artunian, and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.